Hey y'all, look what we're talking about today.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Two, yeah. Because we already did the first one.
That's why you said y'all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to take it back to Texas.
Trying to take you down to Texas for this one.
I'd never seen this movie.
Yeah, you thought you'd seen it, but you hadn't.
I saw it and I was going, damn, why didn't I fucking see this movie back then? I would have liked it even more. I mean, I liked it. But it was kind of like Evil Dead 1 and 2, and the tone was right.
Yeah.
Skinny Puppy sampled the hell out of it in their fucking music and their songs, you know what I mean? And I had seen scenes, but yeah. I'd never seen the whole thing. I just thought I did.
This movie is batshit crazy.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw this, I think I was at a slumber party, and we rented it. I must have been 15 or so. And we rented it, and we just thought we'd seen the first one, obviously. This one is much, much different than the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, even though it was also directed by Tobe Hooper. And I feel like, less so nowadays, but I think when it first came out in 1986, I feel like it was real divisive, like, among horror fans. Well, just because it's a completely different tone than the first movie. It's almost like a parody of the first movie. You know what I mean? And I think, like, some people didn't like that.
I can kind of see what you're talking about, but it wasn't a parody of the first movie, say, in the way that, you know, Escape from L.A. was versus Escape from New York. that went from fucking awesome to, like, what the fuck is this? This year, it's the same tone that you saw with Evil Dead 1 and 2. You'd recognize it in the modern gestalt, you'd probably say it was kind of like Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. You can really see where those...
But funnier and more over the top.
Yeah, but you know
more ridiculous. I mean, I guess those are ridiculous too, but that's where Rob Zombie, I think, got the idea from, because we were talking about Bill Moseley and stuff like that too.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. I kind of like this tone in horror. I find it a lot more...
That's why I'm amazed that you didn't see this back in the day. Because this is right up your alley.
I like this tone a lot better. I think it makes the... I guess you could say you don't have to suspend your disbelief because the tone is not one of realism.
Yeah.
But it's also, to me, disturbing. In the way that House of a Thousand Corpses... Because they're kind of making fun of people's suffering and shit, which I always find kind of real disturbing. You know, Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses kind of had that same tone. When I first saw them, it was very disturbing. So back in the day when this movie came out, I would have seen it. I would have thought it was kind of funny, but I've also would have been pretty disturbed by it. Like, it would have stuck in the back of my mind. I would have been thinking about that. Damn, imagine if... Because the underground fucking lair underneath it, where all the cannibals lived.
And where shit, the Sawyer family lived.
Yeah, where all the skeletons and the shit that they were doing and everything underneath there. It was like something out of House of a Thousand Corpses. And even that movie kind of disturbed me for a while.
Well, as I said, you can tell Rob Zombie was like a huge, huge fan of this movie.
Yeah.
Because this is kind of where he got the tone from, I guess.
You know, I liked the first one, but I like the second one a lot better now that I've seen it. I think it's a better movie.
I would not say that, but they're very different movies, like I said.
Visually, it's a much better movie.
It looks cool. I really, really like the whole production design of the underground layer.
Yeah, the underground layer, the way everything looks.
That's super cool.
The edit, the script, the story, how it moves forward. I think it's a better movie. But, you know what I mean? It's, you know, cinema is, you know, has a lot to do with...
Subjective.
Subjective, you know. To me, this is a lot better movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, it's, I don't know. I like horror comedy because I would call this a horror comedy. It's like a black comedy, essentially. Which
in the way that A House of a Thousand Corpses is a horror comedy.
Well, yeah. Well, I thought that was funny too.
Yeah.
But in a fucked up way.
Yeah. It disturbed me. The fact that they were all that you're supposed to think what they're doing is funny. And they think it's funny. This shit ain't funny. You know what I mean? Not really.
Well, you know? if shit like that is done right, it kind of makes you, like, it's funny, but then it makes you feel bad for thinking it's funny.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This one kind of has a little bit of that, too.
Yeah, they're keeping dead bodies around and stuff and fucking talking to dead bodies because they know the person. Just weird shit.
So, yeah.
Wearing dead bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. So what ended up happening with this movie? So Tobe Hooper, as I said, very famously had done, you know, he'd done the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That kind of made his name in horror. Even if he'd never made anything else, I mean, I'm sure that would just have cemented his legacy. He'd also done some other things like The Funhouse, which we reviewed on there.
Like that movie.
So then he got a 3-picture deal with Canon Films. And if you know anything about 80s cinema, Canon Films, Golan and Globus, very, very famous for doing mostly action movies. They did like Sylvester Stallone shit, like Cobra, you know, a lot of the Chuck Norris movies, the Missing in Action movies, like all those kind of movies.
Yeah.
So they gave Tobe Hooper a 3-picture deal. So I think the first movie that he did was Life Force, which we also did a movie retrospective on. And I fucking love Life Force, and I think it's really underrated. Space vampires, you know.
I liked Cobra.
Yeah.
At the time Cobra came out with Stallone, I thought it kind of sucked. Saw it again recently. No, it kind of aged well.
Sometimes they're better, like when you see them many years later.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a lot to it at the time, but you see it now and he goes, no, it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he makes Life Force. It doesn't make any money. So then he did the remake of Invaders from Mars.
Yeah.
Which actually, that's, I think, good. I saw it back in the day. I remember it being okay, but I don't remember it making much of an impression. Also, that one didn't do very well. So finally, for his third one, they're like, dude, please make a movie that'll make some money. So he's like, I got an idea. I'm going to do a sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I'm going to go in a completely different direction than the original and make it kind of a parody or a comedy or something like that, because he didn't want to do the same thing again. And this one did end up making money. Not that much. It only cost about $4-4.5 million to make, and it made $8 million. So
I didn't
know, not great, but it did make a little bit of a profit.
I didn't know he made that Invaders from Mars.
He did,
that
yeah.
remake.
Yeah.
I remembered liking it.
I haven't seen it in a long time, so I can't really judge.
I want to see it. I got to see it.
I remember seeing it, and I don't really remember much about it, but maybe if I saw it now, it would make like a bigger.
I remember thinking it was just kind of had that cool kind of 80s vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of like an evil version of E.T.
Yeah, an evil E.T. I mean, yeah. That's always kind of like a good...
There was a kid involved, and he knew about where the Martians were, and they were taking over people's parents and stuff. And,
yeah, that's right. Okay, then, now it's kind of coming back.
And then they had the dam.
Now it's coming back.
Yeah.
I'll have to watch that again.
The head Martian, I think, was inside a crystal ball or something. There were tentacles on it. Looking weird.
Yeah, I kind of feel like... I don't want to get it confused with Mars Attacks, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they were taking over... Didn't they take over the dog, too? They would turn people into like robots. I got to see that shit again, though.
See, like I said, you might be getting some stuff confused with Mars Attacks because some of the imagery in it is kind of similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or at least that's how
I remember liking it back in the days, thinking it was a trip. They played it on HBO all the time.
Yeah. So finally, for Tobe Hooper's last film for Canon, he decided to do this one. Now, as I said, this came out in 1986, and it was kind of, as I said, a little divisive among horror fans because I kind of feel like it had been such a long time since the original, you know, it had been like, what was it, 12 years? Because I guess the original came out in 74. And they're like, oh, well, we wanted it to be like more of the same. They wanted kind of, because the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, obviously, you know, everyone's seen it, but it's kind of more like a documentary feel. It's much more realistic. Not much gore. All of the gore was implied, even though people remember it being gory. Yeah. This one, much, much, much gorier. Much gorier. Although, interestingly, as I said, I saw this when I was a teenager at a slumber party. And I remember like sitting there and watching it with my friends and stuff. And we were just like, whoa, so gross and stuff like that. But watching it recently, I'm like, oh, it's not as gory as I remembered. I'm just jaded, I guess.
It's over the top gore.
It's
kind of cartoonish, cutting tops of people's heads off with chainsaws. And then, you know, and the person's still trying to drive cars. You know,
I mean, it's gory, but it's not like...
It's not believable.
Yeah.
It just looks cool.
And Tom Savini did the effects. I think probably my favorite effect is that, like you said, like near the beginning where that guy gets the top of his head off, cut off with a chainsaw while he's driving. The only gory part that I remembered was when Dennis Hopper, which we'll get into this in a minute, when he kicks that part of the wall out and then like all the guts fall out.
Yeah.
And also Stretch wearing her friend's face. I remember that. But yeah, so this is like much, much gorier. So the story behind this one is that there's like an opening crawl at the beginning. So this is set 13 years after the events of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I guess it's been covered up by the authorities. You know what I mean? Because, you know, at the end of the first movie, obviously Sally Hardesty escaped And so they were trying to keep it on the down low that there's like this roving family of cannibals like in Texas.
Well, they couldn't find the house where she said it happened.
Yeah, they just couldn't find, because I guess they bugged out.
Yeah.
So the implication being that they've been kind of moving around Texas and the authorities like think they're almost like an urban legend at this point. So, however, the character of Lefty, who is he's a Texas Ranger, yeah?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
He's played by Dennis Hopper. And he is supposed to be, I think, the uncle of Sally and Franklin from the first movie. Franklin, the wheelchair guy. So he knows that these cannibals are real, and he's, like, trying to find them.
I had never seen this movie, and, you know, I like Dennis Hopper, but I think this is one of Dennis Hopper's best roles. He just plays a fun character, and he does crazy shit.
I mean, he leans into the crazy, big.
He knows the shit's crazy. He's just this Texas Ranger that's hell-bent on fucking finding out what happened to his relatives and to bring these damn cannibals to justice. And once he finds their lair and everything, man, it's fucking great.
I'm bringing it all down.
He just basically runs around all day cutting with his chainsaws. He's got a his outfit with all his chainsaws. And he's cutting down all the little metal.
I'm the Lord of the Harvest.
Yeah. Cut down all the wooden poles that pillars that hold up this damn lair that they're in, and it's a visual sight. I think they really, you know what I mean, they took it to a new level.
I love that lair.
It wasn't a house.
It's massive.
It was an underground lair underneath an old roadside attraction.
Yeah.
Called, what was it called? Texas Land or Texas
Battle?
War? Battle Texas.
Battle Land?
Battle Land of something Texas. Like or some shit like that. It's got all these big fake mountains and fucking, it's got cowboys and Indians fucking kind of and Mexican kind of a motif going on, you know, where it's all kind of coming together in a big old damn war, you know, and it's abandoned and they're living underneath it and they've got it all customized.
Yeah, like in all these tunnels.
And there was kind of like an element of water park too, wasn't it?
A little bit. There were like a lot of chutes and stuff.
I guess there was train tracks that went through those chutes at one time. The tracks.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Because we were sitting there watching. Like, that looks like it was almost a real place. But
yeah, I think it might have been a real place. I don't think they'd have built all that for a movie.
You wouldn't think.
I think it was an abandoned place. And I think the train tracks to the roller coaster were gone. I'm not sure it was a roller coaster. I think what it was is it was something kind of like that ride in Disneyland, the Gold Rush. Where it was chutes filled with water and you had the rafts going down it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. Something like that. Yeah.
But yeah, so you have Dennis Hopper's character who kind of comes into this town and, you know, chasing these people. And these people, the Sawyer family, pretty much the only member of, you know, the same actor is the guy that plays, you know, like the dad character or whoever. You know, the one with the, that makes the chili out of people's... out of human meat, which is kind of like Motel Hell, but
kind of like Motel Hell, yeah.
But Motel Hell ripped off the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so you know, turnabout's terribly.
That's true. Yeah, they make side cash by selling damn human chili.
Yeah,
and he wins awards.
He wins every year.
Yeah, he wins awards. And he's the only member in the family that can kind of go out into public. The rest of them are all just too fucking freaky. I think it's his son, right? The one with the metal plate in his head.
I'm not sure if it's supposed to be his. I guess it's his son or his nephew.
It's not real clear. I think there's a bunch of inbreeding going on in the family too.
Yeah, I guess maybe it could be his son and his nephew at the same time.
Yeah, and he's the dude from House of Thousand Corpses.
Bill Moseley.
Yeah, that guy. Bill Moseley, is that his name?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and he's real young in it. He's got this exposed metal plate that he got in Vietnam, and he's just fucked up, and he's constantly itching and scratching and eating little pieces of his scalp. And I think there was inbreeding before he fucking went to Vietnam, but he was trying to turn his amusement park into Vietnam land.
Nom land.
It's like his dead bodies. Talking about going back to the VA to have his fucking plate replaced, and there's all kinds of weird shit.
Well, he's supposed to be the twin brother of the hitchhiker from the original movie.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because interestingly, Bill Moseley. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Bill Moseley, yeah, he got run over by a truck at the end.
Okay.
And actually, the body that he's carrying around with him is supposed to be the body of that guy.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the run over hitchhiker.
His run over twin?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, they're carrying around their dead ancestors.
Yeah.
And some of them you can't figure, you find out they're not dead, they're actually alive, but they're sold, they don't move. And either that,
well, like I said, that was kind of like the first movie where right. Grandpa came out and he was just
they
like
look like corpses, but they're
200
not.
Years old or whatever. Alive. I think in this one they said Grandpa was 137.
They feed him all liquid diet from fucking human human extract that keeps him alive.
Human extract.
in like a state of near death.
Yeah.
And then all kinds of, and then you got Leatherface there, and he's wearing another fucking rotten preserved body on the front of him, so it's like somebody else is doing it. I didn't really catch. I don't know if that was an ancestor who he was making it look like the ancestor was wielding the chainsaw. I don't know.
It's like he had double disguises because he also was wearing someone else's face.
Yeah.
And then he was also wearing another body like, on top of him.
It was just.
So he's like doubly disguised.
Yeah, Leatherface thinking.
Unfortunately, they couldn't get Gunnar Hansen back to play Leatherface in this one. So as I said, you know, so Bill Moseley, I was going to say how he got this role. This might have been his first movie role. Like, I think he was in a couple little movies before this, but this was like his first major one. He actually got this part. I think he didn't even have to audition for it because him and his wife or his girlfriend at the time, they had made a parody of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre called the Texas Chainsaw Manicure. Hmm. And he had played like a hitchhiker type character. And so when they wanted to redo the movie and they're like, okay, well, we're going to have like the twin brother of that guy, you play him. So it's kind of like channel that guy. Yeah. So that's how he ended up getting the part because he was in like a parody film of it that he had made, like a little independent one, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have that and then you have, so there's the three of them are kind of like the main deal. And like you said, like the dad dude, he's like the only one that goes out and he makes chili and whatnot. Now you also have the other main character being the radio DJ Stretch.
Yeah, she got some fantastic legs. That's what I gotta call her Stretch. She run around all day long with those legs stretched out and those cut off shorts. That's what they're doing. I understand it.
Yeah.
I understand what they're talking about.
She gets involved because she's working at this little dinky ass radio station. Yeah. And there's these two at the very beginning, there's these two like kind of yuppie douchebags and they're driving into town because they're supposedly like this big football game, like a college football game or whatever. And they keep like calling her because they're listening to the radio and they keep calling her with their car phone. I was like, 1986.
Yeah. Car phone in 1986. You had to be super rich.
That was like some pretty high tech shit.
It was like $1,000 a month.
And it wasn't cordless, obviously. No. It was just kind of, and it wasn't one of those big brick ones, but it
you
was like
a radio transmitter in the damn vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
To do it.
So only like super high to high end yuppies.
And it was like $1,000 a month.
Yeah, it was something
for
ridiculous.
The service. Yeah, ridiculous.
Because not a lot of people had it. It was just like wealthy people.
Just super rich people.
Yeah, so they have that and they're driving into town. They decide they're going to call this poor radio DJ and like harass her. And it so happens that while they're on the phone harassing her, they get into the game of chicken, right, with a truck, which they don't know at the time, but contains members of the Sawyer family. And then later on that night, the Sawyer family comes back. Leatherface is up on the roof wearing the face and wearing the other body. And he pretty much like chainsaws through the top of the car and cuts that dude's head off. And so Stretch gets the whole murder on tape. You know what I mean? Like the audio.
Audio tape, yeah.
So, I think that's kind of what brings Dennis Hopper there, because it looked like the cops are like, no, no, it was just an accident. And Dennis Hopper's like, yeah, I don't think you can chainsaw off your own head. Like, and then like that makes you crash your car. So him and Stretch kind of join forces to like go after. So it's pretty much the first half of the movie is the two of them getting together. And then you have Bill Moseley's character who comes in there like into the radio station and starts like harassing her and then kills or takes the other guy that works at the radio station, right, and like drags him back to the lair. And then her and Dennis Hopper end up having to like, you know, chase them to the lair, and then she gets trapped in there and running around and all this other kind of stuff. So pretty much like the second half of the movie is down in the lair. There's also another dinner scene. They do another dinner scene pretty much exactly like the first movie. Yeah. But with her instead of...
I fucked up not seeing it.
You did. This, like I said, this sounds exactly like something you would like.
Yeah, I didn't know that I hadn't seen it. Nobody brought it up. I guess it came out after I had graduated from high school, so it wasn't one that we got at Blockbuster.
Maybe. I mean, it's 86 it came out.
I know. Okay, then it would have been. Maybe Blockbuster didn't carry it or something.
Maybe.
I never saw it.
That's really, weird. Like I said, this seems exactly like one.
Yeah, and the right time, the time frame was correct.
Yeah.
I should have seen it, but no, I never saw it.
For whatever reason, I hadn't seen this one, like I said, since I was a teenager. But for whatever reason, I was thinking that this was the one that had Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger in it, but it wasn't. That was the fourth one, I think. Like, Texas Chainsaw, The Next Generation, or
whatever. I put it right there with the Evil Dead movies. I put it right there with the Jeffrey Combs fucking Lovecraft movies. Let me see what else. I put it right there with, you know, like Hellraiser stuff. But, yeah. But, like, towards the top of that pile.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it's super fun.
Yeah.
It's just a fun, gory... Like I said, if you want something that's more like the first one, kind of like that real serious, you know, documentary tone. You know what I heard is that Tobe Hooper, he wanted to make the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre more like this one. Yeah. I guess, like, that was his original vision for it, was it was supposed to be more like...
He was able to do it.
A parody or more, like, funny. He wanted to make, like, a black comedy. And he still says that the original, well, he still doesn't say it now because he passed away, sadly. But he said for a long time that the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre had a lot of black comedy elements in it, which I guess it sort of does, but it doesn't translate as much, I guess, as this one. So this almost seems like this is what he wanted to do.
If you don't know any of those old movies that we grew up with, but you like House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, this is like the prequels.
It is kind of like that.
Yeah, it feels like a prequel to that.
Yeah, as I said, it's real over the top. It has like this real strange, like carnivalesque atmosphere. Like all the characters are just super ridiculous super over the top. Cat
Spalding kind of tone.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and everyone's just like screaming and like, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. Dennis Hopper, one of the funniest scenes in this for me, it just made me laugh and laugh, was the scene where Dennis Hopper goes to the chainsaw store. Which is funny, because it's like a convenience store and then a chainsaw store, because, you know, that's just how you do it. It's Texas. And he buys three chainsaws without... And there's, like, no talking, like, between him and the old guy that runs the shop. But it's just, like, the... I don't know, just, like, the edits and the facial expressions, like, between them. And, like, I don't know. Something about it, like, just really cracked me up. And it cracked me up that there's no dialogue in it. That he just comes in and buys these fucking three... And then he goes out and just, like, goes ham on this fucking log out there or whatever. You know what's funny is you were saying you think this is one of Dennis Hopper's best roles. It's funny because he said later, I don't know if he still, you know, thought this later, but he was just like, he thought this was, like, the worst movie he'd ever done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, you were in the Mario Brothers, like, the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah.
Like, he played King Koopa, right? With John Leguizamo. I was like, I think that might be the worst movie you're in.
Wonder why you would think this is the worst movie.
I don't know. It's just funny because...
It stands out.
It really does. Yeah. And it's almost kind of like, you know, Frank Booth in Blue Velvet, which, you know, another kind of role that he played. This one, he's kind of like that in this one.
Yeah.
He just like plays a completely crazy person.
I don't think he really understood the tone.
Maybe not. I don't know.
A lot of people didn't respect horror at the time.
That's true. It was the 80s.
And, you know, he was in Apocalypse Now. He was in a lot of great fucking movies. So maybe in comparison to some of the great movies, this was not a highbrow movie. But in terms of its genre, this is a great movie.
Yeah,
this is a great movie.
I mean, if you love, like, 80s shit, like Return of the Living Dead or, you know, The Evil Dead, or just these just over-the-top, crazy, fun, wacky, gory.
The movie is exactly what it's supposed to be. I can tell that there's no mistakes in the movie. This is what they wanted. And I agree with all the decisions, all the creative decisions, everything in the damn editing, the dialogue, the fucking score, and the soundtrack of the music. All
the soundtrack to this. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I really wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Soundtrack for this kicks ass. Yeah.
I put it up there with, like, horror masterpieces with, like, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. I mean, this could be the prequel. You could really see that those two movies were, in a way, kind of like, not knockoffs, but a continuations of this theme and this tone.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly that.
So, that's the prequel.
Yeah.
You know, if you like those movies and you've never seen this one, go back and watch this. You'll love it. You'll see where all that stuff came from. You know, what's his name? Dr. Satan. Satan. There's all kinds of shit like that in there. Just surprise characters that come out of nowhere. You're like, what the fuck is that? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that I just watched.
Yeah, yeah.
In this movie.
And
particularly the very, very famous scene of Leatherface kind of putting the chainsaw into Stretch's crotch while she's just...
Yeah.
while she's trying to like convince him that she's
not
like,
don't do it, don't do it. Yeah.
You're not mad at me. You're not mad at me.
That was a great scene.
I was so fucking
well, that was playing right into
the weird.
That was playing right into the tropes of the time.
Yeah.
When we were renting this kind, these kind of movies back in high school, it was about over the top, fucking wacky violence, horror that made you uncomfortable, and sex, really, just sexy ass women.
Yeah.
That was kind of like the girl from, what was her name? Lorena, she always, what was that? The girl from Beyond. Once she's nearly getting fucking naked.
Oh, yeah.
What's that girl's name?
I gotcha.
Yeah. I can't remember her name.
I can't remember. No.
Quigley?
No. Okay. Linnea Quigley was in Sorority Babes and the Slime.
Yeah, and she was also in
Night of the Demons.
Night, and then, what is it, Return of the Living Dead? Or was it?
Yeah, she was in Return of the
Living Dead.
Yeah, she was the punk.
We're going to see somebody like that in the movie.
Yeah.
So we expected to see that. And this character, she never gets nude, but she kind of had to fulfill that trope of the sexy damsel in distress who makes it.
Although she's pretty kick-ass in this
one. She's kick-ass, yeah.
Yeah.
She's not. She's in distress, but she fights back.
She holds her own.
Yeah.
She doesn't just sit there screaming.
Well, she gets captured a couple times.
Yeah.
But she gets out.
Yeah.
So she is a damsel in distress. She is waiting for a dude to save her. But he never saved her.
No, he didn't.
He had his own agenda. She saved herself. So.
And he just went off in La La Land.
So,
he's just like, you know what I mean? Dennis Hopper. I mean, how many times are you going to say that this movie is the only movie in creation that has Dennis Hopper with three chainsaws in a chainsaw duel with Leatherface?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So she did fulfill the damsel in distress role.
Yeah.
Okay. But the thing is that she ended up saving herself.
Yeah.
All right. And that, which I guess you could say was not really that was also a common trope even back in these days. Like you hear people today saying, oh, those old movies, they were so sexist. The women were not empowered. No, they were always empowered.
Well,
they were always saving themselves.
That first started in the 80s, actually, movies. I do kind of feel like...
So 50s wasn't like that.
No.
Yeah.
50s and 60s horror movies, not so much.
You started to see some of that, though.
A little bit.
I Spit on Your Grave. That was 71?
That was early 70s.
Okay.
That was 72, 73.
Okay.
That's like the whole rape revenge genre.
Yeah.
There were examples of it. But I do kind of feel like the whole, because the whole final girl trope and everything like that, that sort of came into its own in the 80s, I feel like, maybe. Late 70s, because you had Halloween and stuff.
In our lifetimes, the women always did well. They people were trying to save them, but they in the end kind of saved themselves.
They had to be resourceful.
Yeah. Usually what would happen, it was like an acceptable storyline. To a teenage boy who was the marketing. Is that the guy who he can identify with is trying to save her through the whole thing. He can't get to her. He finally is able to get to her. They're together for a little bit, but then he dies defending her. And then she gets away.
Yeah.
Or then she ends up saving herself.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, on Friday the 13th, then Jason comes up out of the water and grabs her. But you don't know if it really happened. You know? Because what about the little boy? You know, that kind of shit. So you don't know if it really happened.
Yeah, don't worry too much about continuity in Friday the 13th movies. And honestly, don't worry too much about continuity with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies either. Because especially after this one does have ties in. Like they're supposed to be relatives of, you know, the victims and the family from the first one. And they do have some. But after this, it just went wild. They just went whatever. They just kind of like, oh, we're going to reboot it. Or oh, this is like in the... They just like fucking went off in its own direction. I wanted to say too, when we were talking about the soundtrack, is I had forgotten how fucking rad the soundtrack for this was.
Yeah.
It has The Cramps.
Yeah.
It has Lords of the New Church.
Yeah.
It has Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
It had Concrete Blonde.
Yeah.
Just all kind of like Rocky Erickson. Kind of really, really cool shit.
And then just the score, the musical
that too.
Score was just real good. And all the audio cues, the soundscapes of it, it was all good. The lighting was fucking really good. Set design, super good.
I loved all the Christmas lights with all the... Because they had all the dead body shit. But there was... it was like a massive, massive area. You know what I mean? That they had to decorate.
Well, even outside the lair too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Up on the surface, it looked great. the nighttime shots, just everything. The outdoor shots, everything was good. The shots of the radio station looked great. The old neon clocks and stuff on the inside, you know, and it was just kind of nostalgic to see all that. And then they had, what is it? Remember how they had all the shelves and shelves of record albums?
Yeah.
When's the last time you've seen that?
I know, that was pretty cool. It brought a lot of shit back.
And how much room all that stuff took up. Yeah. The whole building was taken up with record albums. You don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
You keep that on MP3 player now.
Yeah, back in the old days,
you had to have all that physical space.
You know what's funny to me is that when this movie first came out in 86, they were going to, the MPAA wanted to give an X rating because it was too gory. But Tobe Hooper said, no, I'm not going to cut anything. So they released it unrated. It's just funny.
That's why I couldn't get it at damn Blockbuster.
Maybe, probably. Yeah, they wouldn't do anything that was unrated.
Yeah,
they wouldn't run anything that was unrated.
That's why we never saw it.
I mean, we saw it because we didn't rent it from Blockbuster. Okay. We rented it from somewhere else, like a mom and pop place. But yeah, that would probably explain it, why you didn't see it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't, you know, they would have had to cut it, which is like really funny because if you watch it nowadays,
not much
it's good. Gory, but it's not, I mean, nowadays we've seen way fucking worse.
Yeah, and back in the day, you know, we didn't have internet. So we would have probably known that there was a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. But that wouldn't have meant anything to us.
Yeah.
Because the first one was okay, but you didn't have to see the second one. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a cultural phenomenon back then. We didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
I don't remember even talking about it.
Well, as I said,
had we known, we'd have watched the shit out of it.
Yeah.
We would have liked it.
Yeah. It did okay at the box office. Like, it made a profit, unlike the other two movies that Tobe Hooper had made for Canon. But it didn't make a shit ton of money. I feel like it only got... it got a cult following later, like after it came out on video. Like a lot of people didn't go see it at the theater, like didn't bother. Because like I said, it had been such a long time since the first one had come out. So I kind of feel like people were just like, meh, we don't need more of that. But so I feel like as time went on, as I said, when it first came out, it was real like some horror fans were like, oh, they didn't like it because it's just like completely, completely different than the first one. But then there was like the other half of horror fans were like, no, that's exactly why we like it, because Tobe Hooper decided to just go in a completely different direction instead of retreading the same stuff. And I feel like appreciation for it has kind of grown over the years.
I tell you what, I can guarantee you, had we seen trailers for it, we would have wanted to see it. We'd have found it.
But yeah.
We just weren't really aware of it. I mean, I can remember that we knew it existed, but that didn't mean anything to us.
Yeah, that's true.
There were other movies to watch. If we didn't, we just rented the ones that we would find.
Yeah.
At Blockbuster or any of the other rental places. And I guess because it was unrated, they wouldn't show it to us. If I'm remembering correctly,
Blockbuster wouldn't rent anything that was unrated or NC-17 or anything like that. Like, they would do R, obviously, but nothing like worse than that. If you wanted something unrated or NC-17, you had to go someplace else and get it.
That's weird because...
Well, it's just kind of like Walmart wouldn't sell them if it was over an R.
That's weird because we rented From Beyond, and we rented, you know what I mean? And that was pretty wild. I would
guess that was an R, though.
That was an R?
Yeah.
I don't really see the difference between this and that in terms of...
That's what I mean. In hindsight, you know, this movie's gory, but it's
not really that big
that
of a deal.
Gory. I mean, compared to some other shit, compared to something like that came out... Let's compare it to something that came out in the 80s, like Dead Alive. This is way not as gory as Dead Alive.
What was weird about that time is that you could get around those ratings. And maybe I'm just not really remembering how things were shot. Like, you could pull tricks. Instead of making the blood red, you made it green. And you could do anything you wanted as long as it was green.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of movies...
That's
fucking stupid.
I know.
And a lot of movies...
So arbitrary.
A lot of movies were able to get those R ratings by using blood that wasn't the right color. Well, it's green because that's a zombie.
Yeah.
Or
it's
that's
a zombie, or it's an alien or
it's
something.
It's a demon, so its blood's going to be green. Or that person was possessed by the demon, so the blood's blue, or it's black.
Yeah.
So that's how it got around a lot of that shit. But you didn't notice it.
Right.
Because that's just some technical detail that you didn't, you know, the impression was still the same.
Yeah.
Head got cut off, the fucking blood went flying. The blood was black, but you didn't even really hardly notice it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, well, Tom Savini, who did the effects on this, if I didn't mention it, I do kind of feel like he kind of ran into this problem a lot because, you know, Tom Savini was in Nam. He was a photographer in Nam, so he would have to go around and take pictures of all the dead bodies and everything. So he got very well known for his special effects being super realistic. And so I think that that got him into a lot of... So they ended up cutting a lot of his effects just because they looked too real.
I'd have to go back and look at those Lovecraft movies. And how much you want to bet that a lot of times that the blood was off color?
Yeah, or maybe because that was more in a fantasy.
Yeah, it's more of a fantasy.
Because I feel like you can get away with more if you're doing something in a fantastical setting.
So maybe that's how they got around it and we just didn't really notice it. Because I remember the gore being about the same.
Yeah.
But they must have been playing on some kind of...
But as I said, this was more of like realistic. Yeah. It was like realistic looking corpses. You know, there's one scene where Dennis Hopper shoves the chainsaw all the way through Leatherface's stomach.
Yeah.
You know, there's just like, there's a whole big thing full of... you know, at one point, Leatherface peels all the skin off of the other guy that works at the radio station, peels his face off. Yeah. And then he's kind of like fallen in love with Stretch, I guess. Yeah. So he's attempting to disguise her.
He's just
like, here, put this face. And she's like, oh, please, please don't put my best friend's face onto my face. That's so nasty. Yeah. But he was just like trying to be nice because he thought that was going to hide her. And I was like, oh, that's so sad. Like putting the face on the cowboy hat. And then I like that the skin dude is like still alive. And then I love that his last words are, oh, shit. And then he dies. And then she puts his face back on him. Like, and it looks so bad. And it's just kind of like...
It's cool.
There you go. Yeah. But this is a really, really fun movie. This is definitely like, you know, get a pizza, get some beers, get some of your buddies to come over. It's on Shudder at the moment. And I think it also might be on Pluto TV for free or Tubi or something. But Shudder just added it not too long ago. And I was very excited because I've been wanting to do this for a really long time. And I thought you had seen it.
No.
Because it definitely is something that
you would
like. It's one
of the best movies of that era.
Yeah, definitely something that you would like. But
one of the best horror movies of that era.
If you just love like gory, over the top, just crazy, funny, batshit crazy stuff, then you definitely need to see this. Like I said, it's nothing like the first movie, so don't expect it to be, but it's super fun nonetheless. So check it out. All right, so that'll do it for this discussion. We will see you on the next one. Bye.